The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode is sponsored by Cards Against Humanity, the company that bought land on the U.S.-Mexico border to stop Trump's wall, sued Elon Musk for $15 million for trespassing on that land, used profits from red states to fund abortion access, and pay people to care about the 2024 election. Cards Against Humanity is one of the only companies stupid enough to stand up to Donald Trump. They don't profit from their political stunts, so if you want them to be able to afford a good lawyer, consider buying one of their new games, like Cards Against Humanity Tales, a book of fill-in-the-blank stories for horrible people, or Party Mouth, a new party game about shouting obscenities as a coping mechanism for the hellscape we live in. You listen to Cricket Media, so you're probably smart enough to figure out how to buy their stuff. Anyway, Cards Against Humanity apologizes for interrupting your podcast with their BS. Hey, this is Dre. I'm going to buy some other people. On this episode, it's me, Miles, and Sharonda talking about the news with regard to race, justice, and equity from the past week. And Lord knows, there's a lot going on. Also, make sure you follow the Instagram page at Pod Save the People on Instagram. Here we go. Holiday season is basically here, which means we're all one burnt appetizer away from calling in a garden for help. Good news, Aaron and Alyssa already did. They're talking with the Barefoot Contessa host about everything. Her early days with her husband, her time in the White House, and the secrets to hosting without spiraling. Listen to the new episode of Hysteria now, and make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. It is almost 2026. Super wild. We have one more episode after this one. This is Dre at Dre Wild on Twitter.
This is Miles. I'm just in the universe, y'all, right now.
And this is Sharonda Bossier. You can find me on LinkedIn or at Bossier Shay on Instagram or at Bossier S on Spill.
There's a lot to talk about this week that I am legitimately curious about what you all have to say. First is the color of the year. Pantone announced that the color of the year is white. And it's called Cloud Dancer is the official name, but it is the color white. In the video of the black woman, Sky Kelly, defending it was, I almost thought it was a spoof. I was like, oh, they found a comedian to pitch white as the color of the year in this political moment. And then it was real. And I was like, not the color of the year being white.
To address some of the online comments, let me state clearly that white is indeed a color. We knew that people would have emotions about this year's color. When I first learned the color, I thought, oh, this is gonna be pretty controversial. But the power of this program, the power of Pantone's color of the year, is that it sparks a conversation about color that everyone can participate in. At Pantone, we don't dictate that conversation. We facilitate it.
Go ahead, Miles.
I stand up the absurdist moments that kind of highlight what I always kind of see, but I feel like sometimes it'll feel like I'm being overly dramatic or taking things that are seen as really silly, really serious. And it's kind of cool to see other people take the color of the year like really serious. And I just think a couple of things that came to me. A, I had my African dance class yesterday, and we were dancing, and the dance teacher was saying, you know, Black people, African people, we're of the earth. So a lot of the movements that are in African dance, the bended knees, is because we're earth people. A lot of things that we do go down and are into that rhythm. And it started making me think about, like, what would be, like, an earth dancer. And I guess what I'm really trying to critique is Essence's response, is that there was so much more interesting ways that Essence took that, saw that this huge company is deciding to align itself with white supremacy, deciding to dog whistle, deciding to partake in it, and then our only response is no, Black excellence. And I was just thinking, oh, we are lost. We are in the sunken place. Essence is in the sunken place. Pantene, whatever the name is in the sunken place. That black woman who they got to defend that choice, she's sunk, and she's mistress of a sunken place. Like, I was not baffled, but I was a little bit baffled and I was a little relieved, both at the same time.
Yeah, you know how, like, you see something and you just sort of yelp? I, like, could not wait to put this in the group chat. Like, I could not wait to talk about it because it's so absurd, right? And then when I saw, similar to Miles, like, the Black excellence response, I was like, oh, man, this is just too, it's just too good. It's so predictable. It's so on the nose. It also is like, Essence, y'all are not meeting the moment. Y'all are not reading the room, right? And similar to you, DeRay, initially when I saw the CEO, first of all, everybody's response was like, it's a Black woman over there leading? Like, no one had any clue, right? She hadn't been visible before. So I think that that was also a really interesting choice and moment. And then when she was like, you know, we don't dictate the discussion, we facilitate it, right? And I'm like, she thinking she is spitting bars right now.
Killing it. Is white a color? Yes, white is a color.
It is not the absence of color.
It's such a weird question. I wanted her to blink twice as she was being held hostage by some people and was being like, oh, you got to make white the color. And she was like, girl, if you only knew what I was putting up with. I was like, blink twice, sister. Mm. And then also, Jesus. It's also the fact that as I was listening to her, I was, and I said this in the group chat, I was like, oh, she would make a good president. She should be the next person the Democrats run. Because I feel like everybody's on that bullshit. I feel like everybody's on that type of time of talking around stuff and using this that kind of nonprofit corporate nothing language and using it when we are in dire times. It's not fake Nazis. It's real Nazis. They're not cloud dancers. They're white supremacists. And I really prophesize, if I can do that as a not profit, but like I really prophesize that America is going to choke and die on its own absurdity. I think that we wait for it to look serious or look like German brutalism and look like all these other kind of like design moments that have happened and look gray and look like what's that theater with the poor people?
Les Mis.
Sharonda, the fact that you picked that up was crazy.
I spent a lot of time around Black people trying to figure out songs, names of things. You know what I mean? I'm like, how do I?
You look at it and say the Les Mises. That would be really Black if I made it plural. But I think that we think it's going to look like that. But America is an absurd failure of a project. And when we see it be demolished, it's going to look absurd. It could destroy you and look like an SNL skit.
I do think what is interesting, a little bit of what you said earlier, Miles, is, you know, when you see these things and you're like, am I, you know, you don't want to be like the person who always is like, this is sort of a thing. I do love that while there's a class of people that is becoming more and more absurd, certainly the political class and socioeconomic class, there's a group of people that gets it, that we don't have to say this, that they are in the comments, who were not in the comments 10 years ago. They are like, y'all, this is crazy. So I am heartened by the fact that, like, this sort of absurdity has not taken hold of the whole spectrum of people, I would say. And I appreciate that. No, you disagree? You push?
I don't know if I disagree or if it's a push. A, we should all center our breath. But I also... I think y'all the are thing in that rare would make form me
today.
Fit- it's Sunday. I think the thing that would make me most excited and make me feel most hopeful if people weren't seeing these different things as different events, these little fires and these little moments of white supremacy, and like pull it back. That's why I think I'm always like, okay, this moment, lynching postcards, this moment, you know, whatever happened in the 1920s, because I really think that we don't understand. I think we get fascinated by the proverbial mermaids that get on shore and we're like, oh my God, that's absurd. But I want us to realize the entire water we are swimming in is absurd and white supremacist, and it's giving us some warning signs even in those absurd moments that we see.
I think in some ways that's coming, Miles, in the sense that people... there are enough things that people are like clocking that I think the next part is what you're saying. Like, how do we string them together? But before, people weren't even seeing the, it was what we said about Bell Hooks last time. It was people seeing her say, you know, white supremacist, dominant, patriarchy. And people are like, okay, that's a lot. Now people are like, Bell, you got it. You nailed it. Like that is, so I think that's powerful. I was waiting to talk about the Diddy doc here because I do think there is so much to talk about, almost independent of Diddy himself, but about what Diddy represents, about the role of this documentary, about the response to it, about the rise and fall of that type of celebrity, which feels like a moment in time in some ways. I want to just open it up to see what you all have to say about it, but I have been productively surprised by how many takeaways the everyday person has had about this documentary and around sort of the political moment around it.
I have hated the amount of mainstream news coverage the release of this documentary has gotten. I have absolutely hated how much I have seen 50 Cent sitting behind a desk on a cable news network. Not because I don't think the conversations are important and not because I don't think that there's potentially something we could collectively learn from this moment, but because it has all felt really gossipy, right? And it has all felt not about how we interrogate power or the role of celebrity in our country and in our culture, but about what other freaky thing we're going to learn Diddy did or did not do. And that has been really disappointing. Also, 50 is like not a good person just because he financed this documentary being released, right? And so in some ways, I think there's a little bit of absolving of 50 of some of his problematic behaviors and tendencies too in this moment, which I'm also watching, which I don't think solves for the thing that you are talking about, DeRay, right? Which is like the fall of that type of celebrity. I think while Diddy may have like been pushed out of that seat, I think we're seeing people kind of form and announce natural kind of heat map evolve and build around 50 in a way that I also think is deeply problematic, right? And so what I will say is that people have said, who have watched it, right, that they found that they learned something new and it has continued the conversation. I also feel very strongly like we couldn't have released this documentary pre-trial, right? Like regardless of what Diddy was convicted of, I do think that people would not have given credence to a lot of what was said in this documentary if some of this had not already been adjudicated in a court of law, which makes me wonder about the role of these types of projects and shedding light on the like misdeeds of others. Like I'm thinking about, forgive me because I'm not going to remember her name, but the woman who did the project on Russell Simmons and his abuse of power and abuse of her, right?
Was it Drew Dixon?
Yes, there we go. Drew Dixon, right? That did not get the same reception as this. And I think some of that is because Russell Simmons has never stepped foot in a court of law, right? And so what does it mean also about our culture to feel like we need for things to be adjudicated in court before we will actually engage with them as real possibilities in popular culture?
I was trying to look up the video that one of you sent about the Black woman talking about the other Black woman news correspondent. I couldn't find it.
Mm-hmm. Talking about Abby Phillips. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a Black woman talking about Abby Phillips and saying that what she was doing was, just in essence, a circus and that it's not news or journalism, it's entertainment. And I think that that is a key to how come 50 Cent can be on cable news, because I don't think cable news even exists in that same way. I think that why shouldn't 50 Cent be on cable news? Because it's all a clown show. It's all a circus. So, he a big black clown. Why can't he be a part of it? So my thing is, the documentary is good. So he didn't waste your time. So yes, it's salacious. It's what you need in order to be a good documentary today, because people want to know about the sex. People want to know about the queerness. People want to know about the brutalization of women. We all have a thirst for that, and we like that. That's how come Epstein stuff is successful. It's not just because people just care about women and children's safety. It's because we like to hear about brutality. Again, the water is not clean here. So I think when I look at anybody critiquing 50 Cent being a part of it, I think my thing is, I think specifically if it's from a black person, I think sometimes it's just because we have our own associations for 50 Cent and we're still living in this made up hierarchy that white people threw away a long time ago. Shout out to Hexef. Like, white people have been said, if you can get popular and you can be in the center of cultural power, you could be in the center of power, period. We don't care about your education anymore. It's actually kind of ideal and communistic if it wasn't so fascist and evil. It's actually that literally anybody can get a chance over there to be an evil white supremacist in the center of power. And I think that we see the same thing happening in black culture. Last thing I'll say is, it reminds me of Jason Lee when we were reading that article, and how Jason Lee was quoted, and I thought he was going to be quoted as, like, you know, whatever, media mogul, gossip columnist, whatever. But he was quoted as vice mayor, which he is. Which means he was able to go from messy, 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 gossip mess to political power.
Yeah.
That's the new reality we live in.
I'm interested, too, in the number of victims Diddy had, just, like, across a life. The number of people that he used structural tools to silence, to hurt, to harm. People who tried to tell pieces of this story sort of along the year, right? Because that's one of the critiques of the documentary, right? Is that nothing's new. It had all been told in some form before, blah, 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 blah. But just to think about what had to be true to allow him to last for that long. I mean, he got away with a lot for a long time, you know? Which is sort of like a fascinating, wild thing to watch. And then you think about this documentary, you know, his ego is a central part of who he is. That is the thing. And I think this documentary makes it very hard for him to return to... I think that the Cassie video was bad. People would have still stood by him. He doesn't get convicted on the hardest things. I think the documentary makes it hard, or what I've experienced, people be like, you even did your people dirty. You did, like, your friends, and like, you just did everybody dirty around you, and it is all coming to a head. I was fascinated by that and people's reaction to it.
But wasn't that always clear, too? I mean, as someone who was nowhere near the industry at the height of Diddy's fame, I feel like it was well known he was ripping off his artists, right? I felt like that was part of the deal. And you knew that, you know?
That's what makes Diddy interesting to me, is because y'all liked it. Donald Trump, too. Y'all like him firing people. Y'all like how he yells at people. Y'all like Dame Dash. Y'all like the performance of it. But so it's really not about him being evil and have that reputation. It went too far. And I would say that really, the too farness really came when the queerness started happening with it. That's what it started making him a cultural pariah. But I just saw somebody snap on somebody. Basically, they were saying Suge Knight maybe wasn't a villain, right? And the North remembers, the North being anybody born before 1995, that Suge Knight is a villain by himself. And it's nothing Diddy could have done that could have erased the things that Suge Knight has done. But the thing is, we like that, or we liked that, and we still do. We still like that Young Thug could still have a hit. Kendrick Lamar was not able to dethrone Drake based off of his abuse or misogyny. He was able to dethrone him off of what he was calling, like, this kind of extreme sexual deviancy in the form of pedophilia. That's what he was able to do. So I think that's the answer, is it didn't stop because we have an appetite for that. We have an appetite for men in power showing off how powerful they are. We like it. We meeting y'all.
We meeting y'all. Hey, you're listening to Pod Save the People. Stay tuned. There's more to come. Pazzi the People is brought to you by Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We're almost a year into the new administration, and it's getting harder to read the news and see continued attacks on our First Amendment freedoms daily. Now's the time to look for the helpers, those who are strategically fighting day in and out to preserve our constitutional freedoms. One of the orgs fighting the good fight is Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Their mission is to protect everyone's right to live as they choose, so long as they don't harm others. AU is fighting back and has filed 10 lawsuits so far to defend freedom of and from religion in every aspect of our lives. Whether you're a supporter of public education, passionate about LGBTQ plus and reproductive rights, or some combination of all, AU relies on the help of its supporters to do this important work. You're also a Pod Save the People listener, so you get it. A threat against the rights of one American is a threat to all of us. If you're looking for something more to do to fight back against the growing authoritarianism in our country, consider joining Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Learn more by visiting au.org/crooked, because church-state separation protects us all.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You know, I also want to talk about the challenge to birthright citizenship. I think we talked about it a little bit on the pod, but you know, as you know, if you are born in the country, you are a citizen, and there are very few caveats to that. And he's trying to do some major caveats that say if you are visiting temporarily or are, quote, here illegally, the children of those people, they are not citizens. And as you can imagine, the Constitution is clear to most people that the president can't just undo that, which is why, you know, we put in the Constitution, the 14th Amendment specifically. And the Supreme Court has signaled that they are willing to entertain the Trump argument that he actually can stop issuing citizenship documentation to children born to parents who are in the country without full legal right to be here or visiting temporarily. So I wanted to see what you thought of this in the Supreme Court. What's going on?
I mean, I don't think I'm surprised by this, right? We knew that this was an evolution that was likely to happen. I think we've talked about it in various iterations. You know, people who are the children of immigrants who were born here are worried about, you know, their citizenship being rescinded. I think Miles, you know, last week said this is all an attempt to get to who they really want to get to, right? Which is like Black Americans, and that those of us who don't see ourselves as implicated in this are likely to be real surprised when they try to figure out a way to denaturalize us. Also, I'm deeply worried that the court is hearing this case. I'm deeply worried that the court has decided to expedite this case's sort of movement on the docket and to prioritize hearing it soon, because this court has demonstrated that it is willing to do Trump's bidding, right? And willing to give him the legal cover to do what he wants to do, whatever they need to do to sort of make it sound like it's rooted in precedent or sound judicial reasoning. And that's terrifying to me.
I'm being hashtag hopecore. I'm gonna try that out for at least until my birthday in March. But when I think about this moment, I think about gay marriage and how that just came up, and how what appears to me is a lot of these moments are just to say that you did it and to say that we looked at it, we gave it a fair thing, and we ruled that it's still unconstitutional. So my hope, as of recording this, my hope is that they're just going through the process and performing a fair try and say, you know what, that would be unconstitutional to take away people's citizenship like this when it comes to this. And now let's move on. That's the hope I can offer.
You know, I love you being the hope dealer on the call. The last thing I'll talk about is, and Miles, I was really interested in you to see if you situated this in a larger context. And Sharana, if you had heard about it, that Trump's birthday, which they are reminding us is also Flag Day, is where national parks are free. But importantly, in the official announcement, it says Trump's birthday / Flag Day. Like, that is important. Is now free. And King's birthday and Juneteenth are no longer free at national parks. So he's like doing a swap out. And it was interesting. I saw this segment on one of the right-wing places, and they were like, you're just being woke. It's not really Trump's birthday. This is just Flag Day. They don't really explain like what happened to MLK Day and Juneteenth, but they sort of like use Trump as the foil. And I struggle with it because it's like, in the grand scheme, I'm not sure this is like the biggest thing, but it feels like it's the small things that become the big, like you chip away at it piece by piece. So suddenly there are no remnants or memories of blackness in the American structural apparatus is what it feels like to me. But I'd be interested to know what you all think.
I resist the idea that there's ever going to be a space in history where people do not know who King is. That's just where I am. I think that this is political porn. I think that he can't do other things. He won't do other things. He is held hostage by other things. But what he can do is defile this sacred cow. I think a lot of it, I'm about to get in trouble. But this is how I feel. I even witnessed somebody who I won't like name attempt to like almost like defile Toni Morrison. And I was like, oh, this is kind of like intellectual porn. Like, you don't actually have true critique of Toni Morrison. You're not really engaging with her work. You're not deeply thinking about it and engaging with it and writing an essay or a book about it. You're just creating Twitter storms or social media storms because it's exciting and it stops people from being bored, and people rather be upset about something than bored. And that's what's coming. And I think that is what this is. I think that a lot of people, specifically on the far right, love the idea of defiling MLK Jr. Because at the end of the day, if Christians have Jesus, America has MLK. That is the person who foresaw a type of America that we have still yet to see. He is the prophet of what America could be. And there's so much hate for MLK for being that symbol. And specifically, once he died, he's still seen as even more sacred. I think it's that stuff. Like, I don't think that anybody actually thinks the government doing that is going to stop people from knowing about MLK Jr. And I know that other people know Black folks' traditions when it comes to media, when it comes to culture, when it comes to art, specifically working outside of government, outside of education. So, you know, we know how to keep something eternal without institutional help. So I just think that it's just giving people something to politically masturbate to because he's not giving you these Epstein files.
Yeah, you know, I really got to build that tinfoil hat. Like, I need it. I also am surprised, honestly, that they didn't do the thing that states like Mississippi have done and said, fine, MLK, but do MLK / Robert E. Lee Day. Because that to me seems in line with what Miles is describing, right? Which is the like, you get to have your thing. It's just that we also, if we're going to honor American heroes, right? If we're going to honor people who were pushing us to live into our true values, and MLK is one of those people for you, and for us, it's Robert E. Lee, why can't both of those things happen, right? So I'm a little bit surprised at the move to like remove it and not try to like reclaim it or cram Robert E. Lee in there in the way that they're trying to do with Trump's birthday / Flag Day, right? But I hear you. And I also just think that like the symbolic attacks, because that's really kind of what this is, you know, especially because like increasingly people ain't even got MLK off work no more. You know what I'm saying? So who going to the parks for free anyway? Our employers have already clawed that day back. So it just feels like a chipping away of the spirit too, right? Where you're just like, how many more of these things, as absurd and potentially even insignificant as they are, can we take? And it just feels like death by 1,000 paper cuts.
But it's also like so artificial. I really don't believe that most Americans are getting their cues from the government. I think the government gets their cues from culture. So let's say campaign zero, right? So this is campaign zero can easily say, oh, 2026 is MLK year 365. And Essence can do that. BET can do that. There's so many institutions, both big, small, and medium, inside of American culture that can totally make obsolete what the government decides to do when it comes to stuff like that. So I just think that the reason I resist it being like death by a thousand paper cuts, because I don't think that's where our spirit ever was. That's where we pretended it was, but I don't think that matters. That just happened. I'm happy that it happened and Stevie Wonder sang about it and made the happy birthday song. Like, I'm glad that it happened, but that is not what we needed in order to immortalize King. We needed ourselves in our own imaginations, and that is not dying.
I agree with you, and I would say that I don't want to take for granted with the quickest and easiest bully pulpit, the power of that. So I'm with you in terms of like building real power, sustained power. I think our culture has done it. I think it also matters when like the president calls the Somalis disparaging. Like, it matters that somebody with such a big platform can just do things so quick. Like, this can be just a quick hit and we'll recover and we'll figure it out. And you're right. Like, who even knew that the parks were free, right? Like, because who can go to a park on MLK Day? You know, like, I can't. But I do think that it signals something. And if there's not a good counter signal, sometimes I do think it is disruptive. And Lord knows our counter signals are struggling right now.
100%.
That to me is the critique, because they weren't just struggling because Trump got elected. They've been struggling. It's been not up to par. And I think this Trump presidency highlights that, oh, wow, yes, all of our institutions, all our media platforms have been struggling and we got along to get along because wasn't nobody attacking us. But now somebody is. So let's get this together, because once it's Nick Fuentes, I'm not that hopeful. So listen.
Or like, I think about the protests. We did that absent structures helping us. But then all of a sudden, you know, things get institutionalized and they lose the nimbleness and the scrappiness and the craziness that we had in the street. It came to us. And then you see how that sort of scrappiness sort of gets lost when it's everybody's a consultant and a thing. And it just dies a little bit.
So much around the trans conversation, the gender conversation, I've been talking to a lot of trans queer people as a trans queer person. But like, so much of what has to like defang trans movements and queer movements is that absorption into the institutions, because we shouldn't be trying to regress and say, oh, we're trying to make ourselves seem more respectable or validating or whatever, or say like, oh, we took it too far. I'm like, no, it still needs to be gender abolition. How my mind works and how I see things is, when people try to make you be more conservative, I believe all of this is malarkey. And I think all of it's crumbling, you know? Like, that's how I think you should go about it and not try to fit in and go along and get along, because you already lost once you start doing that.
Yeah, and this is what I wish more of the civil rights people had written about. I think about the people that some people I was close to, and it's like, they get older, you got bills, you all of a sudden have all these things that you just didn't have before that just change the way you make decisions. Not necessarily what you believe, but certainly changes the way you make decisions. But back to the central point is that our counterculture things are struggling and the opposition is rooted in lying, but they are nailing us and frankly stealing our best ideas. Like, they're not even original. You know, they just are taking what we've done really well.
Hey, you're listening to Pod Save the People. Stay tuned. There's more to come.
Today's episode is sponsored by Strawberry.me. You know that feeling, that nagging sense that something in your life isn't working. Maybe it's your job. It doesn't excite you anymore. Maybe it's your routine. Every day feels the same. Maybe it's your goals. They always seem out of reach. Instead of making a change, you tell yourself, I'll figure it out later. Well, stop waiting. Start making progress with Strawberry.me coaching. Strawberry.me isn't therapy, and it's not just advice. It's a success strategy for your future that helps you set clear goals, build a real roadmap, and follow through. Because let's be honest, knowing what to do and doing it are two different things. Strawberry.me matches you with a certified coach who helps you tackle career changes and big life decisions. If you're stuck, this is how you move forward. Go to strawberry.me/PSTP and get 50% off your first coaching session. That's strawberry.me/PSTP.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'll tell you, we've talked about the dollar store a lot on the podcast since it started. I remember my very first article that the dollar store misplaces more mom and pop shops than Walmart. And I remember being like floored by that because I'd always heard that Walmart was the thing killing mom and pop stores. And then I was like, I forget about the dollar store. But then I look at this article that just came out about how the dollar store is overcharging people routinely. I had no clue. And I don't even know, you know, I do check the price on some stuff, but at the dollar store, I'm sort of like, I don't know, it's the dollar store, so I'm not even...
$1.25.
I'm not even checking
$1.25, everything in the dollar store.
So first of all, I also didn't know that there were inspection programs in almost half the states that they go in and inspect the prices at the cash register. Shout out for regulation. But this one inspection, I'll list some things. Red Baron frozen pizzas listed on the shelf at $5, rang up at $7.65. Bounty paper towels, shelf price $10.99, rang up at $15.50. Kellogg's Frosted Flakes, Stouffer's Frozen Meatloaf, Sprite and Pepsi, Ibuprofen, Klondike Minis. Wild, all overpriced. Pedigree Puppy Food, listed at $12.25, rang up at $14.75. 69 of the 300 items came up higher at the register, a 23% error rate that exceeded the state's limit by more than tenfold. Some of the price tags were months out of date. I say this because this article starts by talking about an inspection that happened in 2023. It was the store's fourth consecutive failure. But the thing is that in North Carolina, the law caps the penalties at $5,000 an inspection. So there's really not much incentive to change. The reason I bring it here is I think about the vigilance it requires to just navigate whether you got money or don't. I'm like, I just didn't even think that you have to double check the prices at the dollar store. To make sure that, and they know they're charging you wrong. And if you go tell them, this is in the article, if you tell them, they'll adjust the price. But it's the dollar store.
Have you ever been into a dollar store? Because who you going to tell? Who working?
That part.
I just went through my whole library. I said, oh, you ate that. You ate that. That is the truth.
And there's some states like Wisconsin. Wisconsin actually does have SIP penalties. And the 23 months after Dollar General agreed in November 2023 to pay Wisconsin $850,000, its stores failed 31% of their price inspections. During the same period, Wisconsin's Family Dollar stores failed 30% of their state inspections. So I say this to say that what blew my mind was not that it was one store in the Dollar family thing, but this is actually like, this is a scam that the dollar stores are running, knowing they're the dollar stores. People with no money are just screwed. People with all money are screwed, but I'm like, people go because they don't have a lot of money and they need things. They're not expensive. So I'll stop rambling, but it really did just blow my mind because Dollar General operates over 20,000 stores in 48 states, more than any other retailer of any kind in the United States. They have more than 195,000 employees and net sales of $40 billion. And you are scamming people at the cash register.
My thing is that it's in our hands to stop this. A couple of things that went through my mind. A, apologize earlier. I think I'm thinking about the Dollar Tree. I was just watching somebody by the name of Luscious Massacre. You spell that L-U-S-H-I-O-U-S Massacre. She's a trans girl, but also a drag queen and hilarious. And she goes to different retail stores and talks about how bad the products are. And it's like really hilarious. And she's just one of my pieces of joy this week. But watching her made me think of two things. One, as I always think, this will be somebody so productive to plug into something that is around anti-capitalist, highlighting predatory behaviors of companies. The other thing that came to my mind, too, is that this is innovation because we see that everybody's doing this. We just did an article around how other stores outside of Dollar Generals and dollar stores are doing these price gauges and changing it. What do they call it?
Dynamic pricing, where the price goes up based on time of day, based on demand for an item, et cetera.
But there are companies that do it based off of location and based off of where they are. So it's not just this cloud dancer story. It's also just everything. It's all these stores are doing it. I always was suspicious about how Amazon started taking EBT. Because now you know who's low income and who's shopping with you and who's to stop somebody from making sure that you're paying $10 for your chicken and somebody else is paying $7 for their chicken, right? Mm-hmm. This is one of those stories for me that, F the dollar store. And I think there are just ways culturally that we could totally torpedo like a brand, but also just know that this is not unique. This is something that all stores and all retail services are doing because that's really the only way they're going to get us to spend anymore because so many people are kind of relieving themselves of certain types of consumerism, which kind of gets me excited. But so many people are saying, I want to do something different. So they're like, we're going to squeeze the money out of you.
Yeah. We saw similar articles around like Uber and Lyft, right? Knowing that they could charge you more for a ride if your phone battery was low, right? Because you were more desperate to like get a car, that kind of stuff, to Miles's point. I don't have a ton to add here. I think, you know, what came to me is like the Baldwin quote where he says, anyone who has ever struggled with poverty knows how incredibly expensive it is to be poor, you know? But the second part of that quote is really resonant for me in this moment, which is, and if one is a member of a captive population, economically speaking, one's feet have simply been placed on the treadmill forever. And just thinking about all of the conversation we've had about how extractive this current model and phase of capitalism is, how so many of us are going to have to work for longer in order to just afford like more hours, more years, et cetera, right, to afford basic necessities. And this feels like yet another example of that, right? Because it's like when you go to the dollar store now and you've got to pay more for your paper towels than you even thought you were going to pay. And the option for you, if they're saying like, oh, you have a gap in, you know, your income and versus your needs, like pick up this gig role, right? Like, is this the constant, like it's meant to keep you hustling to be able to afford f-ing paper towels, you know? And that's wild. My news actually sort of builds on this in terms of like what people do and are willing to do and are willing to try to survive and potentially financially or economically thrive in this moment. We've talked before about people leveraging gambling because that feels like an opportunity for them to like, I don't know, acquire wealth, right? And it feels like they'll have a greater likelihood of winning the lottery than they will of like having a job that will pay them a livable wage. We talked about Kalshi, one of the platforms that's a prediction market because you're not technically allowed to bet, but you know, you can predict an outcome. And in the last set of elections happening across the country, people realized that the predictions that were made on this platform were in a lot of ways more accurate than the survey data we were seeing coming out of some of the more traditional and legacy polling firms. And so CNN announced this week that they are partnering with Kalshi to share their prediction data. So now when you turn on CNN, you will be able to see what the quote unquote prediction markets are saying about various real life instances, occurrences, etc. Also, when we talked about Kalshi a couple of weeks ago, talked about the fact that Donald Trump Jr. had joined their advisory board. I don't think we can ignore that connection, particularly in this moment, as we've also been leveraging so many critiques against media. And then lastly, I will say that one of the co-founders of, you know, Kaushi is a woman who is 29 years old, former ballerina, white, et cetera, et cetera. And people are like, she's now the youngest self-made billionaire, dethroning Taylor Swift. So there's also a celebration of that element of this platform moving into kind of more mainstream political and media spaces. And so bringing it to the pod so we can talk about the evolution of this thing that we talked about a few weeks ago here, and that I'm imagining some of you probably heard about for the first time on the pod, but also just so that we are keeping track of like how these things that are online phenomena move into the real world and begin to really shape our experiences and our behaviors in the real world, and who we are seeing get rich when this stuff happens.
So this is, I didn't realize that Kaushi contests the idea that they are a gambling platform, that they just are like, this is not gambling. And you're like, it's gambling.
It's like, a prediction market. You're saying this is going to happen or this isn't. It's not gambling.
This is gambling. But I just wanted to read a quote that was reported by SBC Americas from a Kaushi lawyer about regulation and gambling. The lawyer said, quote, people are adults and they're allowed to spend their money however they want. And if they lose their shirt, that's on them. And you're like, oh, you take no responsibility for what happens, that we will be turning people's phones into just easy gambling. And it's not like at least the lottery, which like, you know, shout out to Black people for the numbers. At least the lottery in places like, you know, some states is like reinvested in public education. So at least if you're going to let people do something that might not be the most productive, it's going to fund public services. This isn't the stock market. It's not going back into anything. People are just going to lose a ton of money. And as much as I'm interested in the prediction market, it doesn't have to be rooted in money like this. But I was actually really surprised that they are a gambling company, but some states are pushing back and making them like file at the state level to be a regulated sort of gambling lottery company. And I think that makes sense. I think there are a lot of bubbles out here. This to me feels like a bubble. I think AI is a bubble. And the thing about bubbles is that white people get super rich in bubble land.
Yep.
Which is how this woman can be 7 years old and the billionaire for, she didn't invent like prediction. Yeah, you know, she wasn't the person to invent that. But just the audacity, especially when the economy's crashing, the idea that people will just like put their money in dollar chunks. Again, at least the lottery is paying for public services. This is just, seems like a scam. And I read an article that said that there's a study that put out that like the average person will lose 22% of what they put in. You know, like this is a losing game.
I will say that when I first read this article, I was in the back of an Uber coming from LAX. And because I live alone, I often talk aloud and don't realize that other people can hear me. And so
you live alone with guns.
Yes, but you know what I mean. But my Uber driver was like, what's happening? Right. And so I was telling him, and he was like, oh my God, I'm trying to download that now. I can't figure out how to place a bet. And then he started asking me questions about whether or not I knew how the platform worked. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
There's so much here. First thing, because DeRay talked about the bubbles and stuff like that. What's interesting is that this seems like such an obvious problem, and then you'll have other people. Like, there is a Black person, like a Black neoliberal capitalist out there right now that's like, how do I make the Black version of it? So I'm sure there is a young, hot, ebony version coming to us that is directly for us, and I'm sure there is a rainbow capitalist that's going to make the quote-unquote queer version, because that is the solution. But I get reminded that predatory governments create predatory marketplaces, and this is a predatory company, you know, it's saying, look how desperate people are. How can we make money off of desperate people? And how can we use their hope and suck it for a couple more pennies? But I don't think that you get there without Obama or Kamala using your hope and seeing how they can suck that too. I think that that is just the dance that we are all in, because it's a predatory dance, and people in power use your little bit of hope that you have as a desperate person in order to sustain that power and to get what they want. And I think that oftentimes our companies just mirror those things. They don't necessarily invent those things. So again, it's not just about this one rich-ass 7-year-old girl. It's about it's about the legacy of predatory companies and marketplaces and what they do to desperate poor folks. And I guess not to say that everybody who's doing it is poor. I know there's some people just doing it for fun, but...
Those people are fine. Those are never the people we're talking about. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Absolutely.
Hey, you're listening to Pod Save the People. Stay tuned. There's more to come.
This podcast is supported by the Obama Foundation. The Obama Foundation is helping to lift up emerging leaders with the tools, training, and support they need to meet this moment in history. At a time when democracy feels under pressure, the Obama Foundation is investing in the next generation of leaders. These young changemakers are stepping up in communities around the world, turning ideas into action and challenges into solutions. The Obama Foundation believes that leadership is not about one person. It's about building movements, fostering collaboration, and creating lasting impact. Through programs, mentorship, and community engagement, the foundation equips young leaders with the skills and tools they need to tackle today's toughest challenges, from civic engagement to education, social justice, and climate action. Hope isn't passive. It's hard work. And the Obama Foundation is giving emerging leaders the resources they need to turn hope into meaningful change. Because when we empower people to lead, we unlock the future. You can help. Donate today by visiting obama.org/youth. That's obama.org/youth.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So I wanted to take a little break. I've been studying so much around just different Black artists and different Black institutions that I had no idea about, so I'm very excited to get back on it. But I want to take a break because Essence has Black excellence this week. So I decided, let me do White Mess since Essence got it on lock with Black excellence. So let me just go to White Mess. So I'm curious to know if y'all heard of this story, because this is a wildfire story on TikTok. But then I'll talk to other people who I think are like pretty sufficiently plugged in, and they have no idea this story existed. So I'm like curious about if y'all even knew this existed. So anywho, a University of Oklahoma student goes to class and she writes an essay. The essay is in response to a study that was basically talking about the popularity of children. The idea is, do kids that fail gender actually get bullied or get worse outcomes than kids that are successful at gender? What I mean by successful at gender is they show naturally masculine interests and performances versus a girl who acts too much like a dude or a boy who acts too much like a girl. And of course, the study shows that specifically boys who fail gender have worse outcomes socially than girls who fail gender. So this student, the assignment was for the students to respond to this article. So instead of this student responding to the article that was there, she cites the Bible and says, I think it's okay. I think it's all right. I think that it's part of God's plan for girls to act like girls and boys to act like boys. And I think any type of bullying is, these are my words, is a kind of recalcification of what God's plan was. So I, in essence, rejects the premise of this assignment. So the teacher fails, the student gives her a 0, and then the student complains, and the university puts the teacher on leave. And we'll see what the outcome is. The reason why I'm bringing this to the podcast is because A, I love gendered mess in America, because I think that's where so much of our stuff is getting worked out. And the other thing is, listen, my relationship with college, not significant, right? I was an adjunct professor for about a year at the new school, and I never did undergraduate. It baffles me, though, the idea that somebody goes into college in order to show a student body or a teacher what their opinion is and not show them that they successfully understand how to do assignments. The actual essay is not in here, but I follow somebody. Her name is Kat Blaque, B-L-A-Q-U-E, another trans girl. I'm just giving all the trans YouTube girls shout outs. But her name is Kat Blaque, but she actually read the essay. The essay was horrendous. Now, I am the kind of person where even if I don't agree with what your essay's saying, if you successfully cite things, if you successfully make an argument around why this is still good, I might still think that you're wrong, but I'll say, well, you did the assignment. You didn't do the assignment, and now you made a spectacle out of it, and it makes me, you know, I don't need no tinfoil hat. You know, I'm just going to say I got a tinfoil brain. It's just part of me. And I'm turning the switch on, because it makes me wonder, now that we know how Erica Kirk was created, how we know Charlie Kirk was created, how all these kind of conservative pundits that seem to come out of nowhere were all formulated somewhere. It makes me wonder, are you purposely going or getting kids from high school to go into these colleges to make spectacles in order to create a political discourse that furthers your political destinies? Is that what y'all are doing, Republicans? Because it's hard for me to believe that somebody would have written that article, been in that class, and thought that would be a successful completion of the assignment. I don't think that you actually thought that. I think that you knew it was going to be a spectacle, and it makes me wonder even more, are there other people around you who are orchestrating the spectacle so we cannot talk about what we need to be talking about, aka these Epstein files? That's where I'm at with this. Like, I'm always going to have a tinfoil hat version of anything that goes on now, because that's where you got to be at with it, because a lot of times, some of the conspiratorial things just prove to be prophetic. We just didn't have the evidence yet. So I think my new thing is always to give two analyses of what I can say that can be published and have journalistic integrity, and what is just me kind of in my tinfoil hat bag, because it was so weird that it just felt so odd that this is what a student would really would try to do with this assignment. And the very last thing that I'll say before y'all comment on the story is, I want people to start calling people, like, stupid. Mm-hmm. I want people to start shaming people for not being intellectually rigorous and still trying to participate in certain conversations. I play a lot. I read a lot, too. A lot of these conversations and a lot of people having entryways into these conversations is because we have made certain type of discourse democratic. And I don't care about the word democracy. I don't care about the word democratic. I don't care if you do not know what you're talking about. I don't care if you don't have lived experiences and have read books on this. And the fact that you're in school where your job is to be learning and you still think that your opinion is good enough to tell a teacher instead of doing your assignment, oh, we need to bring intellectually shaming people back, specifically people who are white, because I cannot even imagine being black and doing this in a school, because I want to make a good grade, because I want to get a good job. That's the whole idea. That's the basis of the scam. So are you so solidified in your social space that you think that you can still get a good job even though you're doing horrible at your work? Like, is that what's going on? Like,
Yeah, I mean, as someone who works full-time in education, we're seeing really coordinated attempts across the country to ensure that there is no intellectual rigor in our classrooms, to ensure that there is no diversity of opinion in our classrooms. And increasingly, honestly, to reduce federal oversight, which, while not perfect, did ensure some degree of equity across the country, is rolled back. We're seeing increasingly people also choosing to homeschool their children for a variety of reasons. But one of the largest homeschooling communities are white evangelicals who write and publish books that say humans walk the earth at the same time as dinosaurs, right? And like that is literally the science that their children are learning. And when we look at academic outcomes in the United States, we know that our young people are nowhere near as academically prepared as their peers in other countries, right? And no matter how much we get that data, your average person who is not obsessing about that data, right, as part of their job or their passion, is not saying like, okay, maybe education should be a top three investment in the United States. Instead, we're seeing the exact opposite thing happen, right? And I think culturally, right, for this young woman, I could totally understand why she would not think, oh, I should at least do the assignment and argue what I believe, citing my sources, even if the Bible is one of my sources, right? Because to your point about who has made it to celebrity status, to your point about who's been able to earn millions on the podcast and speaking circuit, it's the people who have prioritized their opinions, right? And then back to our earlier conversation about the state of cable news, it's a whole bunch of people up there talking about what they think and what they feel, right? And so this young person is looking at this having no understanding of the work, the research, the preparation that used to be required before a professor would even meet with you. You know what I mean? Like I was in college not that long ago. That's what I'm standing by that. And I remember like saying, there's not a world in which I'm going to go toe-to-toe with a professor without at least having done the reading. You know what I mean? And there were some econ classes where I was like, oh, this is deeply problematic, or like, I don't believe this, right? And even at a quote-unquote liberal or progressive school like UC Santa Cruz, right, I read a lot of political and economic theory that just was like, this is how we got here. Like, y'all not even interrogating the fact that like, this is how we got to this real fucked up system that we're all trying to fix. But I knew that if I was going to sit with a TA or a professor to go toe-to-toe with them on something, I had to have at least done the reading, you know, and be able to cite my sources. And I think we are seeing culturally a devaluation of that kind of thought and of that kind of rigor and of that kind of thinker and leader in service of someone who can shout their opinion on the biggest megaphone from the highest mountaintop. And so I kind of don't blame this young woman for thinking that this was how you get things done. She's got so many models for that being the case, right? And she's likely grown up in an academic, I want to know where she went to school, right? I want to know what her K-12 experience was, because I bet you that could have predicted that this is how she would behave when she got to higher ed.
The only thing I'll add is I am surprised at the lack of courage in higher education. And I get it. Trump has been such a wild bully, has made all these schools give up hundreds of millions of dollars, turn over the, like, we've never seen this, and they've been unprotected. The courts haven't protected them. The legit Congress has been asleep at the wheel or has tacitly endorsed it.
But their endowments have more money than God. They could withstand this storm is my position.
I get that. What I think was shocking about this is that they had another instructor write her essay, still failed her.
Mm-hmm.
And then they told the girl that no matter what happens, this won't count against her final grade. I'm like, what? Yeah. You have no courage. I remember being in college. If you were failing, you were failing. It just was, they Correct. Would support you and do that, but it wasn't. And I'm sort of surprised at how quickly the institutions have just completely collapsed to hold up standards.
Yeah. Just to put a bow on it, because I know that we're about to close the podcast, but she's a cloud dancer. And I think that's being reinforced. I think that's what's being reinforced is that, like, yeah, white people can do things that y'all can't do. That was the invisible First Amendment. Before freedom of speech, it was white people can do things that everybody else can't do because we are white and this is a white supremacist country. And I feel like so many of these decisions, to your point, Sharmonda, around these different colleges folding and stuff like that, again, it's that recalcification. So it's not just like, oh, you're being cowards or whatever. You're not being cowards. You're realigning with what you care about. Your University of Oklahoma. We know what time you're on. Now you have an excuse to be who you want to be. So it doesn't matter if it's American Eagle. American Eagle had to say American Eagle, but we all knew American Eagle meant white eagle because we know what the American flag really means. Once you read American symbolism for real. And you know, when you're in Mississippi and you see a lot of American flags, you start getting scared. You're able to read a whole bunch of other moments for what they are. And it's about, now we have an excuse to go back to the power structures that birthed us. And we don't have to bend and mutate ourselves to pretend to care about you all, because we don't.
Touche.
Well, that's it. Thanks so much for tuning in to Pod Save the People this week. And don't forget to follow us at Pod Save the People and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you enjoyed this episode of Pod Save the People, consider dropping us a review on your favorite podcast app. And we will see you next week. Pod Save the People is a production of Crooked Media. It's produced by Adre Moultrie and mixed by Charlotte Landis. Executive produced by me, and special thanks to our weekly contributors, Milesy Johnson and Sharon DeBossier. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.